With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, welcome to the Way Up North podcast. This is a podcast series where we're getting to know the presenters at Way Up North in Rome of 2017. My name is Jenny Hammer, and in the following conversation, I spoke with co-presenters Michael Antonia and Brian Morrow of Shark Pig. And to be honest, I have no idea how to prepare you for what happened. I know we were on opposite sides of the earth, on different sides of midnight, and that time flew by. Besides that, I only know that I had a sore throat for the rest of the day from laughing so much. And if you ever wonder who in the world actually has those huge porcelain animals in their home, you're about to find out.
Can you guys see me? Oh, there we are. Okay.
Yeah. Can you see us?
Yeah.
We have to take these off pretty soon, otherwise we're going to...
I'm going to have an epileptic seizure.
Yeah, seizure thing.
We're just really into the holidays, you know?
I know. I'm happy to hear that because it's fast.
Yeah. I'm really not into the holidays, to be quite honest. I think.
There's the slow version, or there's the strobe version.
Let's see. Wait. I want to see the slow version.
This is the strobe.
Oh, that's crazy. A little more
this
soothing,
is
right there.
And then this one's a little more.
For our listeners,
let me just explain that you're each wearing like an awesome necklace of. Christmas lights, colored Christmas lights in various...
Flashing.
Yeah. Do you guys always have something flashing going on, or is that just...
That's why it's on brand for me with flashing.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
I'm just in solidarity.
You guys gave me, like, quite the view there. Like, the background that I'm looking at.
Yeah, what are we looking at?
Oh, sorry. It's the only section of my house that doesn't look like I'm a hoarder. And so, unfortunately, that's the only view you're allowed to have. And
that's it. You're taking me on a tour. It's just...
We're going to do a house tour at the end.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're giving away a house tour. My house tour is a...
Are you awesome?
Yeah, it's a prize that you can win. Because if you win it, then you feel like, one, your house is bigger than mine, two, cleaner than mine, all your stuff is nicer than mine, and you just generally have your life more together than mine,
better.
Probably.
Because let's be honest, we all feel a little bit better if someone has, like, a messier house or a more, like, screwed up life. I mean, like, there's actually a sweet saying... There's a Swedish saying.
Reality TV. That's why reality TV is big. That's the point.
You're right. There's a Swedish saying that says, this is horrible. I can't believe I'm even saying this. It's like the only true joy in life. And that it is like finding that someone else has it like shit. That's horrible. I have to take that out. People will think horrible things.
Anyways. How does it go? Like were you translating it? Do you know it more in Swedish?
Yeah, I mean, I am Swedish, so it just does not translate well. But it basically says, you know, if somebody else kind of has it shitty or screws up, that's the actually only true joy for someone else is to watch someone else have like kind of misery in some way.
Will you just indulge us and can I hear how it sounds in Swedish, just so I understand the sound of it?
Yeah, I have to like. Det enda som har lyckan är... Wait. my brain just freezed. I'll say it later when it comes back to me.
But wait a minute. Now, are you from there? Because your accent is like non-existent.
If you had to guess an accent in the U.S., where would you guess it from?
I almost can't
Kentucky?
Even hear it.
I don't know. It's...
Kentucky?
Yeah, Tennessee, maybe. Sort of a Nashville accent. Tallahatchie?
I've heard Tallahassee, but never Kentucky. No. I am very good at accents. I'm born here, but I grew up in outside of Chicago. So we moved there when I was 7, and so I did like all my schooling there. So when I kind of put my English brain on, I don't know. Everyone tells me I have an accent. So the other day somebody says, I can tell that you're not from around here, which I thought was weird because my Swedish is pretty good. But anyways, but neither of you are from right now. You guys are both in LA.
Yes.
But neither of you are from there.
Mm-mm. No.
No. Okay. So wait.
No, no. Wyoming. It's like New York. Very few people are from here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're Brian from Wyoming.
Mm-hmm.
You're Brian from Wyoming. That's you.
That's me.
That's how he introduces himself in bars.
That's what my business card says. It actually says Brian of Wyoming.
Of Cheyenne. Of the Cheyenne.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Tell me about that. That just seems like a faraway place. For me, Wyoming is like...
It's pretty far from you, for sure.
Kind of, you know... Just beautiful country horses. Is that true?
It's a very beautiful place. It's a very empty place. There's the least populated state, but it's the 8th biggest U.S. state. So it's like 500 miles across, but there's twice as many antelope as people there. So.
Antelope?
Yeah. Antelope's like a, I don't, do you know what that is? Do people only from Miami know what that is? It's like a short...
Like a deer.
Yeah, a deer with like short antlers that kind of curve back.
Yeah.
And yeah, well, okay, there's about a million antelopes that live there and 500,000 people.
Oh, crazy. All right. Kind of like the rat-human thing in New York.
The what?
Well, there's like twice as many rats.
There's a rat man? Oh! I thought you were. I thought you meant the rat human combo, which I'm like, I don't know. It's nothing like that. And what the fuck are you talking about? It's kind of like the humanzy, the man pansy.
That came out wrong.
Yeah. Well, we're off to a very informative start.
Yeah, yeah.
I know. Listener, I have a feeling we're not going to be getting like points of like
listeners are already getting drunk.
Yeah, if you're still listening at this point of the podcast, we're very proud of you. Thank you. You must be a super fan.
Yeah,
we're going to dispense with the formalities now and get into.
We're about to get really, really serious, and like I'm going to make them cry in some way or another. So just stay tuned. So you guys are like this dynamic duo. Tell me about your collaboration, and let's actually do like a little intro so people know who I'm even talking to here. Because I was confused. I didn't realize you guys were presenting together at Way Up North, but how did that come about? You guys actually work
together. We're presenting together?
Paper shuffling. Just kidding. Shuffles through notes.
Just kidding. Yeah, what do you... Michael, so, you want to?
Don't all jump.
Yeah, I'll go first. my name is Michael, and I'm a DJ. And I think that the thing that's really like pushed my life forward has been music. And my introduction to being a DJ was through hip hop. And hip hop was kind of like the first music that I really discovered by myself that was like wholly mine and wasn't in any part like my parents, or didn't have any reflection of my sister in it, who I have an older sister. And even like a large majority of my friends didn't really listen to hip hop. So it was kind of like my little secret, so to speak. And as such, like I listened to it so crazy intently and like paid such deep attention to it for so many years that I have like weird, completely useless knowledge. That's what I'm going to talk about.
Hopefully not completely useless, actually. But or he's going to omit some of the completely useless knowledge. You know?
But so what we did was we kind of found a device, so to speak, to use some of that information, some of that knowledge to kind of and recontextualize it in a way that it's really fun and interesting and exciting to listen to, but that it still gets across the points that we're trying to hit.
Okay, cool.
If that makes sense.
So you feel like hip hop was, is it, and when you say hip hop, you mean like, I said a hip, a hop, a hibbit. No. Do you have that shirt that says that, by the way?
No, I do not.
No.
Gift idea for those of you who are still.
He's already like, got the panties, though.
Yeah. Skip that.
Let's see him. No, but I mean, you felt like you were the epitome of hip. I mean, like you were living, breathing it so much. That's why you're. I mean, I've heard you play in Stockholm, so I mean, like I know that you are amazing. Like. I was the crazy lady in the back, like, you know, the one who's like dancing a little too much. It's like not appropriate in the theater, but or
flex. Your friends and I.
The sluts.
No. That's not what I said. I said flex. Oh.
No, we don't. See
no, I am definitely not in like an encyclopedia kind of like knowledge kind of guy, and I definitely didn't. I was not like. It was very. Much my own thing. Like nobody really knew that I was like nerding out really hard on hip hop when I was young.
Really?
And so like it wasn't something that I really shared with people until I was like in college and I realized that you could DJ. And I only did that because the people would pay me to do that and I could take that money and buy more records. It wasn't really like the only reason I even bring it up is only because of the context of having Brian sitting right next to me and that this presentation that's coming up. Myself and Brian and another couple of our friends here in town and probably other friends around the world that share this sort of like weird, like deep historic knowledge of it that like are excited, like genuinely excited about what happened. And like that story doesn't get, it's getting told more a little bit now, but it doesn't get told that much. There's so many people who are like, I don't even really know where it came from or how it started or like why. They just know that like, you know, Kanye's a weirdo and Dr. Dre was like this guy who kind of started something, but they're really not really sure. Like, yeah. So that's kind of, it came out of that idea.
And why,
it's funny that it's getting more like, it really is since we first wrote it and like started trying to work with this presentation format, which that as just an aside, that's kind of what it is. Like we have the sort of core creative practices and like lessons that we learned from starting businesses and stuff that we want to explain. Mm-hmm. And the choosing the vehicle of being like, what if we were pulling the lessons out of examples from old school hip hop history or like rap lyrics instead of like inspirational quotes or some bullshit like that. And that was almost just a challenge for us, but it is funny. 'Cause now there's like, the Netflix show came out, the way back and, Stretch and Bobito came out. And like, there are like a few more things that are like right on the nose since we started doing it that came out. But
and what,
like,
we're trendsetting. We're deeply trendsetting.
You're trendsetters. Now. I can tell already the necklace thing set it off. But what is that
we're
thing you mentioned on the Netflix thing on the Netflix? What was that you said that came out?
Baz Luhrmann directed a miniseries that was like about the earliest days of hip hop. Okay. And then there's,
but it was kind of a dramatization, so it was a little loose and fast, and, but it told the story.
And Straight Outta Compton just came out, which the NWA, like how they got started. And I don't know, it's just fun.
There's another one, there's another straight up documentary. It's like a six or seven part series on Netflix streaming now. For the listeners, don't anybody watch this because they're basically stealing our whole game here, but it's called The Evolution of Hip Hop. So there's a lot of stuff in there that's really fascinating. And even we were like really taken back of how much they had really unearthed that I had never heard of before. Which
no matter how random you try and get with the thing and be like, wouldn't it be totally random if we were talking about hip hop history at these conferences or something like that? And then it's like, oh no, it's not random anymore.
It's like I've done it before
with the old presentation that I had that was like all like, I'm like, you know how crazy it is, like how small the Earth is compared to the rest of the universe and bullshit like that. And then people come out with a reboot of Cosmos. It ruins my whole thing. I thought I was like pretending to be so smart, and then they reboot a show about exactly that from the 70s. Yeah, right. And it's on Fox, of all things. I mean, that's crazy.
Do you ever think that they have like a direct line into your brain system there? They've hacked you somehow?
Maybe I'm Manchurian Candidate, you mean? Like I'm being controlled by the government?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there. But Brian, what's your relationship to hip-hop? Because your background is not in music, or is it?
No, not really. No.
No.
I just, sort of, the opposite of what Michael said. My big sister was a really big rap fan when we were growing up. And so I just sort of like absorbed it through osmosis in that way. But I guess I was a band geek. Like I played trumpet for a long time. I was in the marching band and stuff like that. I played piano and crap like that. But when I say crap, I don't mean those instruments are crap. I mean, I was crap at it. Okay. And John Souza, yeah. John Souza will crush you on the trumpet. That's tough.
Yeah.
That's eventually, awesome. You know. That's so annoying. It really kills your lip. Anyway, I think part of it that we both agreed on what makes it fun to have a presentation that's like about creativity principles or like creative entrepreneurship and stuff like that, and then be using hip hop examples, was that when we were kids, it was sort of generally regarded as being like this bad music, like music you weren't supposed to listen to.
Not generally, like universally.
Oh yeah, I mean straight up, people were actually like at Congress like stomping on CD or tapes, NWA tapes, and people are, you know, rap stars would get arrested and stuff, and they were saying stuff that had never really been said before. I mean, you don't think of Two Live Crew as really being a group that had a historical significance, but they were the first group to ever be officially censored by U.S. Congress, which is like they threatened the First Amendment. So I mean, that's wow. Pretty legit. You gotta get it.
But then on a micro level as well, like it wasn't and I'm talking about the 80s at this point. It wasn't the multi-billion-dollar worldwide phenomenon that it is now. It was super underground, and for like white kids growing up in suburbia, like it was like almost inaccessible. It was like a really just kind of follows the same lineage as blues did in the United States, where it was a very specific urban setting that allowed for this kind of experience to happen, and everyone else kind of frowned on it. And to me, that was like all I needed to know. I was in. I was hooked immediately.
Oh yeah,
but it was like my parents would get pissed and rip the tape up. In.
Yeah, exactly. So, it was like you got to hear. Like I remember like listening in the some kid's basement, just like listening front to back to an Eazy-E record, and it's just like
awesome.
like a drug. It was like, he can say that? It's so funny, so lewd, so violent, so like, I don't know, from a different, you know, I mean, so this wrong. Basement isn't Cheyenne, Wyoming. Like, we're listening to Eazy-E talk about just things that I've never even heard about or thought about. It was so fun. And it was kind of like not allowed, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, that's probably what makes it fun for us to dig into the history and go like, oh, like actually be reading about the behind the scenes stories of how these artists came up with the tracks or how they sort of innovated within that industry. But it's not really, I just want to say, like, it's not really about that. We're like, it's really important that we get to Rome and explain to people in the wedding photography industry the roots of hip hop. That's not really the point of it. That's the vehicle for just being like, hey, this will make it so that the information we're really trying to get across is entertaining. It's like a vehicle. It's just a format for it.
I think the background is relevant though, in the sense that like I mean, what we're essentially saying to people, all of us, anyone who gets up on that stage and starts talking to the audience, or anyone who gets on any stage, any teacher, any person presenting anything, really, is, if you're doing it right, is be yourself and speak right from your heart and do what you love to do. And so, you know, when we started getting into these kind of like speaking engagements and teaching, which is not something that either of us are trained in, though we really enjoy it, the trick was like, how could we make this about something that we're really actually legitimately interested in? Because neither one of us are wedding photographers. We're not, you know, so we're talking to a group of wedding photographers. We're not going to try to pretend that we're deeply interested in that.
Right.
That's fine. Like, it's great. It's pretty interesting work that people do, but that's not my thing. So I want to talk about the thing that I like and how can I manipulate that into a stream that goes into the brain of everyone.
Right, right.
That's the idea.
And do you think that, I mean, we're all like adults here. We're going to be. Is it
us
weird?
To be? Yeah.
For our listeners at home, I'm just cheersing you on the screen right now.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. We're in two crazy different time zones. And I'm just going to finish
you,
up my morning.
You know, you actually kind of misled us. You said you were going to be day drinking with us.
I will. I will.
Right. I will.
You think there's coffee in here?
It's 7 a.m.
So for the listeners at home, she's pointing to her coffee cup, pretending that she is drinking.
I'm just kidding. Right. I need to get a coffee in me before I crack a beer open. But
fair.
That's fair. Just, I feel like last night I was up way too late. Do you ever get like, find yourself that you, this is a total tangent, but like, say you see one documentary on like Catholic priests who are pedophiles, and then you're like, oh, I have to watch like three more because they're like the suggested ones. You're like in it, living, breathing it. And then
Jenny, what kind of like what thread are you on that's suggesting Catholic priests or pedophiles? Is this what you're
saying?
Wait, so just real quick, this is what you're saying that you stayed up late for last night?
So back to you guys. I just want to get back on track here. We're kind of running out of time. It was actually about Queen Elizabeth. Okay, that's what I. Nerded into Queen Elizabeth. So it was just, I thought you could relate more to the priest.
She thought we could relate more to pedophiles. It's well, chill. Look, I mean,
we're all adults.
Yeah.
I'm like, note to self, erase my comments. No, but what I was going to say was, isn't it kind of weird that we're like having to teach ourselves to be ourselves? I mean, what I'm trying to get to is, I have this feeling, just my personal opinion, is that we are not taught, like growing up, that, I mean, doesn't that seem like the most important thing, or to kind of like follow? I mean, it feels like a lot of us are going to, even if we go to college or not, whatever, for other things, you're just like encouraged to do other things. And then like we have to relearn our everything and reprogram our brains at, you know, 30, 40, 50 years of age to like, hey, you know what? Here's an idea. Do what you really like to do instead and like do that full out. And so that will make you happy. Does that seem weird?
Well, I think that the world is set up by people with a lot of deep desire to sell you shit. And as such, the main idea of marketing and advertising is to be like everybody else. And that's like, I think that that's kind of the common way that people are brought up, is to believe that you have to have the same kind of shoes and you have to have the same kind of pants and you have to have the same kind of haircut, or you're not, you know, you're going to be an outsider. Outsider is bad. Different is bad. Even when you have that cool art teacher in school who's telling you the opposite, it's the minority voice.
But yeah, what do you think, Brian?
And it, well, I think I learned this from Michael from one of your other presentations before, but just the sort of exploding rate of people who are becoming freelance like as their career, not as a phase between two different jobs or whatever. And I think that that has just changed so much in one generation, in this period of time, is really like a massive change that's happening for a variety of reasons. But just that the workforce before really wasn't set up that way. And so there were tracks that were, you were encouraged to go education up to a certain level and then sort of split down this way or one this way because you need to have a good job. This job can provide you with this sort of quality of life and this stability to have a family and this and that. And then, you know, I don't know. I saw this thing on Facebook the other day about this dude who just makes giant swords. He just straight up makes huge swords. Now, that's his job because he's just the kind of freak who thought it would be cool to actually take like a sword that would be from a video game character that's like just outrageously not a real size. Like it's like a 7 foot long sword that weighs like 100 pounds. And then he welds it for real, like an exact replica of it. And then it's like chopping through like blocks of ice into a thing in his backyard and then sells it to people on the internet. And now that's a job that you can have because that guy's just a freak who loves big swords and found out that there are other freaks who also love big swords. And now that's that guy's job. But so you see, like, that person didn't exist in the career model of like, do you want to be an engineer or a, you know, like, not that doesn't, they're from two different worlds. And I just don't think that information was moving around the world at a rate where you could have explained to somebody from, say, like our grandparents' generation, you know, well, I just have this one very particular specific thing that I love, and I'm just going to do that. And I think there would be a way to actually turn that not only into just like a fun hobby, but a job.
Right.
But that is changing, I think, at a very fast rate.
Yeah.
And in ways that people don't even fully understand, like, it's just kind of too fast to even keep up with. There's no, like, academic like major canon to address it because by the time that can even be written, the whole thing is different.
There seems to even be just a lot of backlash, especially in the US on higher education because it's gotten so fucking expensive that nobody can even afford to do it. And then, you know, your diploma is basically worth nothing when you get out of college at this point.
Right.
It's like a high school diploma now to us. And so you're much more likely to be able to translate your actual skills and your portfolio, or depending on what kind of work you're interested in, your personal brand, which is so many people are talking about now.
Yeah. I mean, literally no one has ever asked me. I worked freelance in film and TV production in LA for almost a decade before I started Shark Pig. Did you think anyone ever asked me for my degree? Like, you know, it's like, hey, I want to be a PA. I just want a PA gig. All I want is just like a couple of days on the show. Like, do you have your degree in film?
No.
I mean, I do have my degree in film. I'm not saying that, but I have my degree in film from the Maharishi University of Management. So it's like, it really doesn't matter. I mean, it's like, it matters. It doesn't matter. It matters to get an education. I don't think either Michael and I are saying that like knowledge doesn't matter and developing a skill or a trade doesn't matter. Of course it does. But it's a joke. It's not like, unless you're going into a super specific trade skill or something like that. But even that is, you're probably better off going to a trade school, not like a university.
Right.
We also live in a weird bubble, you know, between Los Angeles and before here, I lived in New York, and I think this is probably true of a lot of places, that it's really more about your relationships with people and your ability to hustle than it is about a lot of other things. But particularly in Los Angeles has got to be the freelance capital of the world. There's so many people just like taking naps at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and like day drinking.
Crazy. Yeah, it'll flip you out when I first moved here. Like, I was like, man, I just don't know what to do. I got to find a job. Well, I guess we got to go get brunch because, I mean, you still got to eat. And then you go to brunch at like 11 o'clock on a Tuesday. It's full. You can't get a table. You're like, wait, nobody has a job?
Who are these people? What do you guys do?
Everybody is not working. working right now. But then they also work like crazy here, because actually, like, pretty much even when people are partying here, it's a big trick. It seems like they're not working, but they actually were working.
Everyone's working,
networking and stuff.
But so what did you actually then go to college for, Michael?
Yeah, I have a fine arts degree.
Okay.
I've never shown it to anyone either.
No, but what does that mean? Like, fine arts, so it's like in...
Yeah, so as a kid, my dad was a painter, or still is, a painter, sculptor, really super duper talented. And yeah, so I kind of thought that would be cool. And I studied fine art, I studied painting, studied art history and humanities, and excellent education. Like, it really, I'm super glad that that's part of my foundation, but very infrequently applicable in my life today.
And it seems like you knew pretty straight on that, like, music was your life. You were like, just, I mean, the
yeah,
way you were describing,
I,
just like,
so like
the music was like, I mean,
when I was little, like, you know, when I would get allowance, or I was like pretty industrious as a kid, and I would mow lawns and shovel driveways. I grew up in the East Coast where it snowed a lot.
He's a hustler. He is a hustler through and through. He's awesome.
And like every dollar I made went to records. That was my game. And I would buy and sell shit and somehow convince my friends to do things that they didn't want to do so I could make money and buy records. And that's been my move. It's still my move. But at this point, like, buying records is my number one favorite pastime.
Oh, and still, you know, that's music, still what you do with your money.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's a few more responsibilities now, but but yeah, I definitely spend a lot of time in dusty old record stores. But yeah, so I guess the thing is like, and this is just true, like, I never knew. So I played music as a kid as well. I played drums and I played guitar and stuff, but like Brian was saying, like, I was never like a prodigy, and I knew I at best had the possibility of being in like shitty indie rock bands and having a life of like seriously unfulfilled, like, artistic expression. So I never really knew that there was a way to make money or make a career in music. So I went into advertising and marketing, which is like pretty much the opposite, worst side of the world.
Right.
And thought I was going to make a career there. And the longer I did it, the more I did it, the more I realized that music was pulling me. And every time I tried to put it down, it made it so clear to me that I was doing the wrong thing. So I finally just quit advertising and went full-time into music. And I've since, in a weird way, come full circle and now come back to advertising and marketing, because that's basically
what
I do for my
about.
Businesses.
Yeah.
But like, but yeah, so that's definitely my real love.
But I love that. Didn't you write somewhere that you feel like this career chose you? You didn't choose it. It chose you. Like, you were destined somehow to do it.
Yeah, 100%. I like I said, so when I moved to Los Angeles from New York, my wife had been given a really amazing job opportunity, which is why we moved here in the first place. And it was like the pit of the depression. It was like late 2007, early 2008, like weird stock market crash, and all the banks were failing and things were pretty dire, particularly in a place that like traded on entertainment and like frivolous, like over the top shit that, you know, goes first. I tried my hardest to get another job in advertising and marketing, and it just wasn't there. There weren't jobs. People were getting fired and laid off, not hired. And so I was like afforded this rare opportunity where my wife had a great job and things were comfortable. But then all of a sudden she got pregnant and it was like, oh man, something needs to happen right now. And she was, I mean, God bless her, was like kind enough to say like, look, follow it, go, like, take a year. If it doesn't, you know, take off in a year, then let's talk about it. But like, don't stop fooling yourself and just do it.
Needs to happen. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really quite the gift too. I mean,
no doubt.
I know a lot of people that have the opposite kind of struggle, you know, to break free. So that's awesome.
The thing Michael's not telling you, though, is that he would have just figured out how to do that anyway in some way, because the thing he really can't resist is, like I said, he's a hustler through and through. Yeah. Not like a drug hustler or anything like that. I just mean like what he was talking about being a kid.
I did my stint.
He used to like buy kids bikes that were like a little bit broken, fix them, and then sell them back to them.
You'll figure out
a job out of anything, and it can't. Trust me, as somebody who's very lazy at heart, who actually just wants to do nothing. I hang out with Michael all the time, and it's like it is just insane the amount of stuff that he'll drum up. If it's ever slightly calm, then it's like we gotta stir some shit up and make something happen. I'm like, okay, all right, let's do it. He would have turned anything into a job. He would have turned I learned a lot from him about how to do that as well, which is like it doesn't exactly the advertising side and marketing side was not the fulfilling thing. And I do totally get what you're saying about like the music chose you or something like that. But what I would want to clarify about that from watching that whole process happen is it's not like that sounds a little bit like a princess story. Like you saw a shooting star and then you knew it was a sign. I'm going to be a DJ. Check this out. It's not like there was anything all that romantic about it. You just were like, okay, I worked for Michael when this whole thing happened as like his PA. And so we were on this insane ad campaign where we were literally spending millions of dollars, basically just the two of us, just going around and throwing money at people. Yeah, well, it sounds like a humble brag, but we agree that the term is actually world's worst man, because it's basically just like, hey, can we have your parking lot? I'm like, no, I don't want that. I'd be like, yes, you do. Let us have it. We'll hire it. We'll pay you. No, just do it. Just throw money at it.
It's just so annoying.
We're the world's worst man. We hate it. There's an Onion article we always reference that says, world's worst man decides to go into marketing. Point being, I was so broke that I was literally homeless when I first started working for him. I was literally homeless and a bunch of other shit that I don't want to even get into. It was just a very bad time in my life.
We'll go into it at the after party.
In Roma. I walk into this like luxury hotel where we're staying because that's where like you do all business in that world or whatever, and just dropped my backpack and started crying because I was like, yes, I have a bed to sleep in. But not homeless. I was living on the street, but okay. I was living with my friends. And I had really pissed all of them off, and I had to get out of Los Angeles. And yeah, I wasn't starving, like living on the streets, starving, but I did eat like a bag of chips over the course of 5 days and weighed like 35 pounds less than I do now. I was in bad shape when I came to work for Michael. And then I'm like, this is the shit. This is the best. We've got so much money, even though it's not ours, but we can spend it on stuff. We can eat whatever we want.
And Michael, what did you see in Brian when you first met him?
To be quite honest, it was an introduction from a mutual friend of ours who I'd known for a long time and trusted. So it was more of like a cosign on Brian.
You didn't like when I trash ate that waffle in that fancy hotel.
But this, you were already hired at that point.
Yeah, it's too late now.
Okay. He was pre-approved. But you discovered pretty quickly that you guys were a good match, or how did that process like?
Yeah, and this is the thing, and like I think this is kind of, you know, like we were talking about earlier, this is the currency that we really trade in, is the ability to collaborate on something. It doesn't matter what it is, like, and I think this is, you know, just to kind of like, in the podcast business, we call this a segue.
Hold your thought of your segue, because I sound like a raving lunatic, and I didn't get to finish the point of what I was saying. The point of the whole story was,
and we're so we're in,
we have this fat gig, traveling around, spending millions of dollars of other of a corporation's money just for basically, you know, marketing, which is basically like pointless nothingness. And I thought it was the best. Michael's like, "This is it. I'm out. This is my last gig." I'm like, "Really? What are you going to do now?" He's like, "I'm going to become a wedding DJ." I'm like, "Huh. Sounds great. What the Fire fuck me. Are you talking about? You know, like, what are you talking about? How could you want that?" He's like, "No, but it's going to be hype. It's going to be like a totally different thing. I'm not going to be like a cheesy DJ. It's not going to be whack or anything like that. And I'm going to turn that industry on its head, and that I'm going to set this whole thing up." And really, that then I just sort of like working for him and like trying to just in the same way that he would. That's the point I was trying to make before, is like in the same way that you would have done everything. It's not like that the career of music chose you. Yes, I'm glad that you followed your heart's desire and said, even though you had a high paying, what a lot of people would consider a powerful job, a successful job, you gave that up because it wasn't fulfilling. That is legit. But what I'm saying about like how you made your DJ business go off, it has nothing to do with like fate or like,
yeah,
because
so
like, because it's just your, and no offense, like you're a talented dude, but I'm saying like, it's not because like you're just so talented that it just went off. I mean, then we just took marketing and promotional like principles to task on your DJ business. Yeah. And then when it was like, "Hey, you want to do videos?" We just did that for my video business. Yeah. And then it was like, it would have been anything is all I was saying. That's the only point I wanted to make before the segue.
The background story is that I did sit on my hands for probably 8-10 years as a DJ. Like I had pretty cush existence opening for a lot of really big acts and being involved in some pretty big shit and playing in front of thousands upon thousands of people, which was pretty dope. No complaints there, but no money to speak of. And it was not like a career at all. It was like weekend warrior biz. And so it wasn't until I cared about it and really pushed on it that was the ultimate change. But to go back to what you were saying before about like, you know, that we've had a good time working together, or that like I saw something in him quickly or whatever, is this idea that universally, to me, the most important thing about being a creative, and like sort of for those at home listening, I'm doing air quotes because I think that's sort of weird way of describing what it is that people do, because it's this overused term, but
you mean the term creative?
Yes.
Yeah.
In air quotes.
I'm a creative. Oh, really? Nice to meet you. I'm a dumbass. I mean, like, what else what is anyone else besides a creative? If you're a human being, like.
But I guess the way I sort of define it, and I think that it's like customarily defined as somebody who's probably freelance is a better word, or an artist, is that collaboration is the most important part of that equation. So if you're a photographer, if you're a painter, if you're in film, if you're a singer, it doesn't matter whatever your output is, it's a very dark, deep, lonely, boring ass road to do it by yourself.
Yeah.
So finding somebody that you can bounce ideas off of that will help you with things that you're no good at, and that is just generally just kind of fun and funny to be around, is it's like paramount. And that's what I found in Brian. And you know, we have other collaborators that are along those same lines. You know, we work sort of in a big crew here, maybe about 10 or 15 of us, and so to find that synergy over and over and over and over and over again, it's like that's unbelievable to me. It is like a literal dream come true, that part of it, just being able to work together with other people that I respect. And
did you hear that? It's like a dream come true working with me.
I bet he's not this nice to you when you're not like on the podcast.
He did give me a little bit of whiskey before we started,
just to like lube you up a little bit.
But yeah,
it goes for all the things you said. You said if you're a painter, a writer, an actor, a filmmaker, or something like that, those are all like art forms. But I would say the need to be able to collaborate in this day and age also goes for if you're a businessman or woman of any kind. If you're just it's not just limited to the arts. Like, yeah. That's why I was joking about being like, "Oh, I'm a creative." It's like, yeah, there's people who you specialize in what has been traditionally considered a more creative medium, like the arts or something. But honestly, to succeed, I think, in anything, and not coming from because I'm like, I'm a huge success now, but I just am like, in the, I can't understand how anyone would do it without you being able to collaborate with people along the way. I mean,
yeah, it definitely weirds me out when I hear, because and like going to a number of conferences, both wedding related and ones that are a little bit more broad in their scope in terms of just like entrepreneurial or freelancers or whatever, what the hell, like consultants, that's the new one,
yeah.
Is like that there are people out there who actually do it all by themselves, who sit at home and just like fire away at the laptop all day long.
I mean, I would venture to say that at least wedding industry here is very lonesome. I mean, I think that's why these Way of North conferences also are like very popular, is because people have such a need to like connect with other people. And I think, unfortunately, it has become, and it was for me for a long time too, like, okay, I may be an extrovert and, you know, I love people and I love to laugh. But unfortunately, I do what I love professionally, but I do it like alone, and I have to like get those things from other places, which, so I think that message is like,
it's time to shake that up a little bit. Cause
yeah,
I mean, I'm not saying it to you. I'm saying it to anyone who's listening, all three of the people who are still listening to this podcast at home right now.
No, say to
me. They
all
like
three of you connect with each other now.
Go tweet me. I think that there's so much to be gained, even if you can't see it before you set out to do it. Like to Brian's point, we didn't know each other at all. Add one more segue in here, we met at brunch.
Where, oh yeah, that's right.
In Los
yeah.
Angeles.
That's funny.
Nice.
So that's there true. You go, right? See how I did that?
That's beautiful. I'm taking notes right now.
Yeah, go. This pod's going off.
It's not called segue, it's called a reach around. Oh no, that's something else.
That's something else.
Whoa.
Yeah, pause. that I met Brian, I didn't know him at all. And, you know, we have a few things in common, no doubt, and definitely a lot of friends in common. And, you know, then we were thrust into this job that was like 2 months on the road out of town. So, I mean, you get to know somebody pretty quickly doing that. But
which was what? Sorry to interrupt you. What was this job that was 2 months out of town?
We can't talk about that.
Yeah, next question.
We can't say that.
You must.
No, we can't talk about it.
But I can tell you that we did a month in Chicago and then we did a month in San Francisco. And this is also, just to throw a little context in there, while my wife was pregnant with our first child. So it was kind of weird for me to be away. It was definitely weird for me to be away. And then, you know, like, being on the road with somebody that I didn't really know. And we never set out like, okay, and then once we're done with this job, we're going to start new businesses together and work side by side, shoulder to shoulder in the same office for the next 10 years. It was, you know, it was unknown, but that discovery of saying what if a lot, or could it happen sort of idea, I think not enough people really like investigate that kind of thing. And man, it's so rewarding, you know, when you do have that kind of a partner to work off of and to bounce ideas off of and to, you know, use their like talents and connections and abilities. And
I think it's definitely worth like kind of reiterating that point, which is that it's most of the time it's unknown. You know, we didn't know we thought that we were going to be working together for a month, and then it turned into 2 months. And then that was actually because I had like pissed my friends off so bad in LA from when I was couch surfing never endingly with them before. Michael went back to LA and was like, hey, they said they'd give us another week on the job, so you can get one more week of being hired for another week. Why don't you just come down here? And I'm like, I can't really go to LA. Like, I can't really show my face around there. And then he's like, dude, what are you talking about? Like, they'll fly you down. Just come down here. It's going to be the easiest week of the whole thing. We're just going to be sitting at my kitchen table, like putting receipts on paper and, you know, just wrapping the job out and stuff. So I'm like, okay, I'll go. And then I end up accidentally moving back to LA that time, which happens to me from I've tried to escape like multiple times, but I can never fully stay away. The whole thing is just, I think it's corny in a way to say like, oh, it's serendipity or like it was fate or something like that. It's not really like that. But it was also not, I mean, it's really not planned. It's not like you're like, come down and wrap this job out for 1 week, accidentally move into Dougman, and then we'll start companies together like a year later. Like, no, we had no idea. We thought it was a week. We thought it was one more week together. And that's ended up being, you know, now we're traveling to foreign countries to speak about creativity principles through the vehicle of old hip hop. We've never been able to say, oh yeah, this is probably where this is going. You know,
quick sidebar is that Brian's really not into fate.
No, I get it. Well, fate, I mean, what is fate? It's also like you're saying, okay, it's not to be confused. That doesn't mean you don't put in like a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into something. I mean, it just, part of it is probably like kind of just listening to that inner, you know, whatever, like what do I want to do instead of like not listening to it.
Or just even being down for it. And that, maybe that yeah, is right. sort of a way being of being, it, is yeah. sort of fateful. Like, I mean, I'm like, okay, well, I'll come down to LA. Let's just see what happens. Like, I don't really know exactly what it is. And in terms of, you know, I think in terms of if we're both saying how important it is, like community building and collaborative, like being collaborative with people and not isolating yourself to be part of this new workforce is, I think it's sort of important to also go, it's not dependent on you. It's not necessarily that you're like, okay, who should I collaborate with? Because I need to map out how the whole thing is going to go ahead of time. Mm-hmm. Because some of the best, coolest, hypest shit happens basically on accident. I mean, basically is, I guess, fate. Like, it's not. It's completely unknown.
Did you see what just happened?
I'm just trying to clarify what I'm saying. Anyway, it's fate. You're either destined.
And now he's talking about destiny. Jenny, I want to thank you for this intervention with Brian. Everything's going to be just fine. Oh, I have it.
You're welcome. You are so welcome.
I was going to talk about Destiny's Child. I wasn't going to talk about Destiny.
He's really, really into Beyonce.
The club is full of ballers and the puck is full of girl.
And now he's singing. Wow, I didn't even know we were going there.
You know, the other thing that you were talking about when you were going, you know, I think the industry can be really like isolating. There are people who are just... And I'm actually talking about the wedding photography industry, where there's so much time just spent like editing, you're at your computer, you're by yourself, and how like a conference like Way Up North can be really fulfilling just to be like building the community. I would say that there's like another really important part of collaboration from our, I think both of our perspectives is like, and this part of my presentation that I did last year at Way Up North in Rome is like, yes, you can have a symbiotic relationship that you benefit from because this other person that you work with all the time is good at some of the things that you're not good at. But you also have to be able to contribute to the thing. Right. Yeah, you have to contribute to it. So there's always that part of it is kind of like what the individual part. You have to sharpen your skills. You have to be – once you have this network – or an opportunity kind of to like, collaborate with somebody, you still are the individual that contributes into that relationship. And it is just like, you know,
it's like the crowdsourcing model in a smaller way, in the sense that like, I don't really have the budget to hire somebody to shoot like the level of videos that Brian and his team shoot for my company. And, you know, Brian maybe doesn't have the, you know, the bandwidth to source all of the music, or there's always a trade. And that's the thing, like, maybe it's difficult and especially like to keep coming back to the photography thing, because neither of us are photographers, maybe it's difficult to find what that balance is or what that trait is, but you have and the other one person who's still here with us on this podcast have this very valuable commodity to trade, and you need something in return as well. So whether that's something for a specific shoot, or if it's something that I don't even really fully understand,
and,
or whatever.
And who knows?
Who knows?
What it you won't be, understand.
Yeah,
that's
might,
the whole
might
point.
Not be anything. But just putting that vibe out there and putting that intention out into the world that, hey, I have this thing that's really worth a lot of money. I charge people tens of thousands of dollars to do it. I'm happy to do it for you for free. And then hopefully you'll do something for me in exchange. And that sort of trade, that sort of horse trading, or what's it called, like in the old days before they had money and they bartered. Yeah, that kind of bartering. That I think to me, or I can at least speak for myself, is the single most important thing that drives all of the business that I do, is that I have that ability to call on a lot of people. And so I've made it a point to go around town, whether that's to other business people or to other people who I believe in, or to just random people, and sort of offer that up. Like, hey, I have something to offer you. Right. And now as I build more and more businesses, I have lots of things to offer. And I also expect some stuff in return. And now it's just like the abundance of it just like unleashes itself on me, and reciprocated from me to do it for those people as well. And it's a really good feeling to not say, well, I'd love to be able to get some nice headshots, but I can't afford to get a photographer, or I'd love to be able to get some, you know, you fill in the blank, but I just can't afford that in my budget right now.
And I mean, the wedding industry is like, I feel like nobody says this. The wedding industry is so full of hype, creative people. When I first like kind of got into it, I'd been working freelance, like film and TV stuff for the longest time. And then Michael was working with Whitney and Jesse Chamberlain and started this amazing wedding photo company called Our Labor of Love that then spread out into this group of really talented photographers as well. And that was kind of like the core team. And we started working with Max Wanger. And then it was like, oh, I could do some videos for you guys. But to be honest, I felt like pretty embarrassed about the from like a film world. It was like, oh, I'm going to start doing some wedding videos. Like, it was like, oh, this is like kind of going to be like, oh,
I don't normally do this, but you know, just a little.
Well, I normally hang out with these cool people, right? This is like this complete misconception I had about it. As soon as I got into the industry, in air quotes, if you want to call it that, but like really the whole community within the wedding world, the most dynamic, like most creative, most ambitious people from all different walks of life.
And nicest.
And yeah, and they care about stuff. And it's like, I don't know.
As compared to the rest of the music industry on my side, the film industry on Brian's side, the advertising
world, industry, oh my god.
Worst people
alive. You guys have a lot of people to compare it to. So you've like sampled.
A lot of people who really very full of themselves, very ego driven, very hard to get along with, and cutthroat.
And the other thing about the wedding industry is that it's people who all came from this other thing. Like, you know what I mean? You could go like, oh, Michael, he's like a wedding DJ. That's it. Well, no, he's not just that. He has all this other backstory of different, not only just different jobs, but also different interests and other things that he brings into this job that he has it currently in the wedding industry.
Right.
But that's not the whole thing. And I find that to be so common. Like anybody, you end up getting to know people and working with them because the pace of it is kind of intense and demanding. You know, you work these like long days that are, it's an event. So there's all these factors that you can't control. And you're like kind of having to work together. And if you get along with your colleagues, usually after the wedding is over, you're having a beer or something like that. And you find out that it's the exact same thing with everybody else. They came from this other world. They had this whole other career. They left it and came to this. So, you know, if you're talking about like, hey, you should be open to collaborating with people, you should be down to like kind of network, not in the ugly version of the term, like networking events that suck, but like just to build your own network, you don't even have to necessarily worry about like, well, I want to be friends with somebody who can give me headshots.
Right.
Who can give me headshots?
Not body shots.
I want to be friends and collaborating with somebody who can give me this specific thing. Right. It's more about just being like, I'm down to work with people who I like. I'm down to help people if they need help, and it's something that I know how to do, mm-hmm. because it's usually the unknown thing.
Always.
That comes around and like actually changes your life. It's not the thing that you go,
the one,
well,
one trick.
What are you going to give me if I do that, this or that or something? It's just like, I guess I should get better at trying to explain this before Rome. This is probably a pretty important point, but like it's a sort of more like a state of being or like a state of mind to be down to help people and to ask people for help. To build a relationship and work with people, that's what collaborating really is. Not keeping score, right. And going like, well, that guy really owes me because I would normally charge them this much dollars for that. It's like, oh, come on, man. It all comes around in the end. I mean, not, I guess not always. Some people are not good people to collaborate with if they don't contribute, like I said.
Right.
If they don't really contribute their own stuff. But for the most part, I find – just like the most creative, coolest people in the biz. And it's not usually because of the thing that they do in the wedding business, actually. It's because they have this whole other thing that they know how to do.
Well, you were saying, Brian, sorry to interrupt you, Michael, but like if both people are relatively cool, you generally would rather give a little bit more in a collaboration than be the one that takes a little bit more. So if you find those right people, and most are probably like that, I'm assuming. Then,
it's Christmas every day.
Yeah. There you go. I mean, then you're just like kind of getting synergies or whatever.
There's a Bill Murray quote that I read the other day, who I'm a huge fan of Bill Murray. It's something like, and I might be off a little bit here, but it's something like, I just say yes to everything and don't expect anything in return. It makes life a lot easier.
Awesome.
Such a brilliant quote. That's so dope. And I can't really say that I do that because I say no to a lot of shit, especially lately because I'm too busy and I have kids. But I mean, it's a pretty good way to like at least start the day.
It's awesome. And it's funny that you bring up Bill Murray because the last podcast I did was with Heather Jowett, and she, the background that she like chose for the podcast was her mantle, and on the mantle, all I could see was like part of a painting. It looked like a Jesus, like one of those kind of, what are they called? Fresco kind of thingies. And then, and I was like, oh, what do you have there? Like, kind of like, just trying to, and she lifts the laptop like this, and the head was Bill Murray. And she was like, oh, I just really like Bill Murray. So that seems to be a common thread. Really, but I love that quote because it's like, that's just awesome. It's very like kind of Buddha like too, I feel like. To bring it to the religious side. Speaking of religion, no, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
So what about, I mean, most people when you think like this industry is like, how do you do that with small kids? I'm assuming your kids are quite small.
Yeah, I have two girls, they're 4 and 8. How do I do what? Travel around and
keep it.
I guess I just have a really solid wife.
Solid wife, bro.
My wife Elizabeth, who is a incredible human being in so many ways, also is the primary caregiver for our girls. So when I'm here, I'm very disciplined about the time that I work and the time that I'm home. And I try to be very disciplined about how I am at home, in the sense that like I have pretty strict boundaries about my phone and about my laptop and about kind of the time. Like I've said this before, and I really try to kind of make it a mantra. I try to say it as much as I can, is that if with the amount of time that I do work, which is considerable, and the amount of time that I travel during the year, which is staggering, humble brag.
Yeah, brutal. You can brag about it if you want. It's more like brutal.
If I wasn't spending every moment that I could with my kids when I'm here and like being 100% there with them, yeah, I would be like world's worst person. So it's real straightforward for me that like when I am here and when it's 5 o'clock, I'm out. It doesn't matter what's happening. Building's on fire, I'm leaving.
Because the kids will know as soon as you kind of check out mentally too. They're like, hello. 100%. They notice right away. So you can't even like hide it.
Yeah. And let's hope that that's a sign for the future that they're not going to be as bad with the technology as we have been. Because they're aware of how like debilitating it is for you to be able to multitask when fucking with a phone. But yeah, so I guess that's one thing. The places that I get to go that are really fun and really interesting, I bring them with me.
Oh, that's cool.
So I don't bring them to like the less
the club.
So they've traveled around quite a bit with me, which has been real fun and real memorable for all of us. So
that's awesome.
But I don't know. It's hard, but I think I got to say, at least from my own personality and my own style of life, that it would be considerably harder if I had to go work in a cubicle for like a pharmaceutical company, mm-hmm, 40 hours a week and only have 2 weeks off. So regardless of the fact that I'm maybe not around as much as some dads are, I make the most of it, and we have a lot more fun than I am.
And you're in many ways setting a good example. Like you wrote on your website for them.
That's the hope, is that, you know, and this kind of goes back to what, I don't remember exactly what you were saying in the beginning, but there is this, oh, I know what it was. There's this idea, and I think it was our parents' generation that really started it, because I don't believe that the World War II era parents really said this to their kids. I think that the baby boomers started this, is if you work hard and study and, you know, apply yourself, you can do whatever you want to do. That kind of mode. And I don't think that they really got to live that life, or not many of them did. I think that my generation really has had like untold opportunity in that way. But like, it shows that there's projections that something like 45% of the workforce by the year 2020 will be freelance. That's like crazy town.
That's wow. Mind boggling. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. And so that idea that we keep like using that like a mantra, like repeating it over and over again. If you work hard, if you apply yourself, if you try, you can do whatever you want. And people say that, maybe don't even understand how much power there is in that statement. But to me, it means everything. Like, I don't want my kids to work for, you know, I don't know, a corporation. That's terrible. That's like, I'm trying, if anything, to instill in them that that's the worst possible outcome.
The other way around, instead of being like, some parents would be like, just get a secure job, have a good education,
yeah, so
you
can pay that.
The
bills.
You're the other way. Like, so if your daughter comes to you and is like, Dad, I want to be an accountant for a pharmaceutical company, you're going to be like, ah, oh, hell no, you will not. Do not.
I mean, look, like, I mean, it's that's sort of a hard thing to say. That's a hard thing to really predict right now. But what I can say is that if I try to lead by example, as opposed to be some sort of tyrannical like figure in her life, is that I want them to think like, dude, my dad has had it made. He has like his own business, and he has a building, and he has a bunch of shit, and he has like people who work for him, and he travels all over the world, like that kind of stuff.
Shit.
Like, if at the end of the day, that's what their takeaway is. Like, maybe they don't even really know exactly what I do. They're pretty young. Like, I don't know if they fully get it. They come and see me play records sometimes or whatever, but it's still a pretty, like, lofty concept. But they do know, like, my daughter, my oldest, will say things like if I, you know, bounce to go see, like, her play or to see, like, some performance at the school or something, she'll be like, "Did you sneak out of the office?" And I'm like, "Yeah, like I told everyone a lie, and I said I had to go somewhere." And she's like, "Well, what are they doing there now that you're not there to boss them around?" Like, she's aware. She knows that, like, Papa's in charge down here, Daddy.
You're like, Brian's probably sitting with his feet up on the desk and, like, smoking a cigar. No, I'm just kidding. Where'd you go to, Brian?
I'm just right here.
There you are.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like peeking around as if I'm going to see you.
I'm close by.
What about you, Brian? What do you feel like now, the people around you, like, when you – do you have, like, friends from back home that you went to school with or whatever that are, like, living the opposite life of you?
In terms of – you mean, like, having a more traditional –
Yeah, what I just imagine, like, that. Do you have friends from back home who are like, "Oh my God, Brian, he's like huge star. He's like in LA. He's got his own business."
I don't think anyone thinks I'm a star. I think some people think that I travel a lot and that it's like really glamorous or something. And I do have the worst, like, wanderlust. Like, I can't help but want to see as many different parts of this planet as possible before I die. But you know, it's also funny. I usually try to, if somebody says something like that, I'm like, "Yeah, but you understand that's just like marketing for my brand, right?" I mean, it's like,
take it with a grain of salt kind of
thing. Well, yeah. I mean, you know, Instagram doesn't usually show like the part where you're like in a really bumpy plane ride and hungover and thinking you might throw up or something. You know, it's not like you show the vista of like from where you were before and then you kind of don't show the rest of it. And I don't know. It doesn't, I'm not really sure. Sometimes I kind of go like, but yo, that's just marketing. that's fine. I love that there's free platforms out there where you can just market your own business, because that leads more towards the things that we keep saying. Like, people can launch their own thing. You can get your ideas out there. You can get your products out there. Mm-hmm. Even if it's just kind of like, you can even basically like connect with people on like an aesthetic level. Like, it's not even your work, but you're like, "Check me out. I like this type of thing." And it attracts the type of clients or collaborators that are like, "I also like that." It's cool. It's really cool. Yeah. It's also sort of like, well, I don't know. Fake, I guess, is what it is.
It's fake, but there's something real to it, because it's like, if we like the same kind of stuff, then we're bound to like connect on some level. So it's not totally fake, but yeah, I see what you're saying. It's not like, if you're only looking at that, like, "Oh, that's Brian. I just saw his Instagram account and I have the full view," you know, obviously that's not.
That's, we have not a part.
What are you trying to say?
Then you saw the rest of my apartment and realized he's a hoarder freak. So yeah.
I have a book to write.
Michael and I have a point in our presentation, and I try not to give too much of this away, or maybe hopefully we're always changing the presentation and trying to reformat it and stuff. Where like,
but spoiler alert,
we quote Flava Flav, who's the hype man from Public Enemy, and saying, "Don't believe the hype." And I try to tell people, I hear actually a lot on, I don't want to rag on social media too much or spend too much time on it, but I hear like this common thing about people being like, "Oh, I had to get off Instagram or get off Facebook because it makes me feel bad about myself." And I'm like, what the fuck? That's just, it's fake. That shit is fake though. It's not, I mean, yeah, it's kind of real, but it's not like But that's kind of what it is. It's hype, you know?
Yeah,
you're like hyping up this lifestyle that you lead or this company that you have is successful or this experience that you had is you get this little snapshot of like, and of course it's people choose the most beautiful part of it. But it's
like watching reality TV and believing it's reality.
And believing it's real or something. Yeah. And so not only do I say, but then the real tricky one is, okay, so don't believe the hype as in, this other person's life is as picture perfect as you see on their Instagram feed. The real danger is when you start believing your own hype. When you're like, yeah, I am a big deal. See, this many people clicked on their fucking phone.
85 likes.
Who cares? Who fucking cares? It doesn't matter. It's not real.
It doesn't mean anything.
You know, it's hype. It's a marketing device. Don't let it get attached to like your own actual self-worth in some weird way. That's so weird.
I think what you said there is actually really, really interesting. I mean, that the danger is not so much feeling like, oh, everyone else is perfect. Look, their houses are amazing and their jobs are amazing. But like the real danger being when you start to put your own like meaning in there, in your own likes. I mean, yeah, that's.
Yeah. You're like, very slippery. See, slope. I am, even though I feel empty inside, I am getting
fire.
A lot of. Wait, what did he say?
I am fire.
Oh, I am fire. Oh, they said I'm fired. I was like, I'm fired. You're fired.
Wait, right here on the podcast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Fired.
Anyway.
Speaking of you're fired, I just want to ask you about Donald Trump before
no,
I let you go.
No.
Okay, just because I don't have that many. Americans for the podcast, and I am an American citizen, and like have been following obviously what's going on over there. My friends are like in having to go to therapy and stuff, like they're in bad shape. What's not to close it off on a super sour note,
man,
we'll do something fun, we'll do Mad Libs after this, but I just want to know like what do you guys say like to each other about what's going on?
I'll tell you what I say. Ready? I wish for happy holidays, prosperous time, and love, peace, and unity for all mankind, except for that motherfucker Donald Trump.
Okay.
Fuck that guy.
Yeah. Seriously, what happened? I mean, how can this happen? And you don't have to answer that. It's kind of just one of those questions. I think people are just like reeling. I mean...
I think there's a big part of the population that has been underserviced for a really long time, and they don't care how it happens. They just want a voice. And I can't really fault them for that. I can fault Trump for it because he's just playing them. So there is a real situation here in this country where there are a lot, clearly, about exactly half of the country that feel like they have been completely disregarded for 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that's true or not, it doesn't matter. They do feel that way. And
they got pandered to in that way of going like, hey, this has been wrong. What you've been getting the, you know, a bad deal for the last 8 years. And I'm here to fix that for you.
But can you guys explain this to me? This is what I don't understand. At what point does like having absolutely no experience, why does that seem like a good thing? I mean, in most jobs, it's like, okay, you have experience and you have a passion for something and you like, that's a good thing. That means that.
Yeah. But Jenny, here's the difference is like when it comes to politics and particularly in the US, I feel like this is one place where, you know, I can sort of empathize in a weird way is that the generic average politician is the worst human. Like they are trading and horse trading in people's daily lives to their benefit, like on a financial level. They are taking money from dirty motherfuckers. They are basically pawns and puppets for huge corporations. So many of them. So their experience, fuck that. Fuck their experience. I'm not interested in their experience. That's why I think Obama was such an interesting candidate. Not that he didn't have experience. He was a senator. But that that he wasn't an insider. He wasn't right. a DC insider. And I think a lot of people see Hillary Clinton as a DC insider. She clearly is, you know, and that's not to say that she wouldn't have been a much, 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 much better pick for president. But it is true that the establishment has failed us in so many ways for such a long period of time. And people are not tuned into like the new way of doing things. And man, I don't agree that he is the new way of doing things, Trump that is. But I think a lot of people think, well, it's better than what we've been served.
Oh, all right. Yeah, well, we'll see what happens, I guess.
Well,
once Rome happens.
See, like, nukes, like, mushroom clouds going off. We'll see.
We'll see what happens.
Well, like, I mean, that's could happen. I mean, it's not even, like, a joke.
It's scary.
Yeah. All right, well, we'll see.
I think what would be good, I keep trying to keep, like, keep some sort of hopeful, upbeat outlook on it. And, I don't know, something that seems to be, like, you know, another quality of like a lot of the politicians who have come and gone out of our lives, and maybe less so in the office as president, but certainly so in like the members of Congress and stuff, is they're just bland. They're just beige. They're yeah. so forgetful that I really think like business as usual was so easy to just continue along, no matter how unjust it's been. It was like business as usual. And it's just like, there's this guy, I don't remember his name. It's like, yeah, they're just basically like boring nothings. And now that there's such an insane thing actually happening that most people, and please, if anyone is listening to this in Europe, please hear. A lot of Americans do not want this to have happened. We're not all crazy. We didn't want this. But I really think that as a byproduct from it, or what I'm hoping, is that people are actually going to wake up and realize like, hey, this can get completely crazy if we're not involved in it.
Yeah, we're actually in charge.
Yeah, and like, it's important that you actually stay involved in it and do something, and not just at a voting level, but like consistently throughout. I mean, that's how the what we're saying is so unjust. The corporations have lobbyists who try daily to get their agenda pushed through.
I think they do, like, daily. I don't know that they try.
No, but I mean, but even if they're competing with each other, but they're certainly not waiting 4 years to be like, well, we got it. We elected our official and that's that. I trust that everything will be in our benefit from now on for the next 4 years. No, they're daily in there, you know, working on it. And I think the people – like the actual main populace is, I hope, is, and whichever side of the aisle that you're on really, is waking up and realizing that there's like, hey, there's something to do here. You need to actually get involved in this. The stakes are high. So I just keep racking my brain. I'm like I said, even in trying to stay positive is just racking my brain and going like, how can I actually contribute, and not just by like repush, you know, sharing super blue bullshit articles on my Facebook page. That's not doing shit. I don't think that's doing anything.
Maybe it's hurting
actually. Part of the problem. Like, actually go out and do some stuff. Actually figure out like what can happen, and not necessarily even just in terms of resisting. Only, but also to go, are there other ideas that you have that you just haven't been putting into action? It's now's the time. Don't wait. Like, it's important. Get things going. Change things, because it's really going in a scary direction.
But seriously, after talking to you guys for like a little more than an hour, I feel like I want you guys to be our next president.
Oh, no, we can't.
Politicians. I mean, I mean, say yes. Pull a Bill Murray and just like, not president, obviously. You guys, there's something to be said about getting some fresh blood into.
Well, look, let's start with
when they start digging up my backstory. You know, is this like, you know, Yeah, Bill Clinton was like, well, I didn't inhale, you know. Yeah. It's going to be really tough for me to make it past city council at the most, really, with what I've got in the past.
Give it the old college try, Brian, is all I'm asking you. Now you're giving me one of those, like, well, I don't have anyone to take my headshot.
Well, I'm just wondering if maybe there's something more that I can actually get accomplished by just going around the whole thing anyway, you know. I mean,
well, if you come up with something, seriously, that would.
I'm going to try to go shoot. I definitely am going to. I'm waiting to hear back whether or not I need to go to New York for like a job presentation.
Okay.
Right before the inauguration. If that's the case, I will make my way down to DC to film the protest. It's supposedly rallying to try to get 1 million women in DC on inauguration day, which would be awesome thing to witness. And I want to contribute what I can contribute is from a media perspective of just shooting what I shoot would have no spin. I'm going to put it up for free for people to use and reuse in whatever way they want. If I can't make it out to DC, there's a huge demonstration being planned in LA and I'll shoot it here in LA as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. For the inauguration.
Yeah, on the inauguration. Yeah.
Yeah.
And even if people can't get out, like this is a great example. I joined this like political action group that people just created on their own. Like, and it's just this little network of people going like, how can we actually do something? What is there something we can actually do besides like retweeting or whatever? And somebody there has said, clued me into this big movement that's happening, which is a complete international boycott on the inauguration day. So I'm trying to help spread the word about that, which is just to say, everybody, if you can, if you are resisting, if you disagree with what's going on here, don't buy anything that day. Don't go to work. Don't go to school. Don't contribute to the economy in any way. Resist. Like, let's make that shockwave felt. And they were saying national. I said, why not make it international? Like, why not? There's a lot of people who are resistant to the idea of this whole administration. Taking it seriously. So, like, that's one thing that's so simple because I know a lot of people feel like there's nothing I can do. Well, that's one thing you can do.
Yeah.
You know? Make a sandwich. Make a sandwich the night before. You're not going to brunch.
No
brunch. That's what it should be called. Hashtag no brunch. Don't buy anything on inauguration day. Let's at least say something, you know.
I think it's a great idea. I'm totally on board. I'm gonna like write it into my calendar and just take the day off. I think it's seriously.
I wonder if you got that many people even just to take the day off.
Yeah.
Even not just out of anger. What are the other ideas that many people might come up with for ways to improve the planet besides just being like, fuck these guys? Yeah. Although that is a prescient, urgent need.
But if we see that it works, we could also do good.
Yeah.
For the power of good. Oh, well, that's good. Oh, let's leave it on that good note.
Wait a minute. We got to do one more thing. There's got to be something else in
Trump?
Here.
Come on.
We can't leave it on Trump.
Two Americans talking about Trump? It's fucking lame.
I mean, can you give us something? Can you give us, like, what's going on in your world? What are you about to do today?
So, it's still dark here. It's literally the solstice today, isn't it? Yeah, the darkest day. Oh, this is the day it turns, whatever.
So how many hours you got? How many hours of daylight are you looking at? Or it's not even daylight, right? It's like twilight.
The sun grays, kind of twilight all day. We have some sun some days, but it's not good. It's, it's maybe 4 or 5 hours of twilight and then it gets dark. Yeah. By 2:30 it's like dark again. So today I'm actually wrapping.
How do you guys fight that off? Like what's your technique?
A lot of people we have a big problem with like seasonal depression actually, but think that'll set in especially after the holidays. Now it's still kind of like a few days until Christmas and you know people are preparing, so but that is, it's a huge problem. So a lot of people leave Sweden actually planning trips, going away just to have something to like look forward to go to the sun. But I actually do okay with it. I find that having something booked in like in the future, January, February, that kind of trip does it for me. So I do okay, all right with it. But it's we're recording this on the Wednesday before Christmas. So and I don't know when it's going to air, but I'm going to wrap things up here at the studio at my like office and then take the holidays off. So it's basically my last work day.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, which is nice.
Well, I mean, we're drinking on your behalf. So maybe if, like, I guess one thing we could ask if anyone's actually still listening at our, we're at like 90 minutes maybe now. So if you've made it this far, maybe it's time to just like crack a beer with us.
Yeah.
Yep. Cheers. Cheers.
Let's do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I used to never really put anything in that coffee, but that's all right.
You know what? I actually we'll have catch something up with you. Chilled in the refrigerator. I'm kind of tempted to pull it out. But that would have been cool at the beginning. Now it's just, to start it now would just be kind of, I have to think about
kids. Then you're by yourself. Like, just, yeah.
We're going to make up for it in Rome.
You'll make up for it in Rome. Yeah. I'm really looking forward to it. I hope to be going myself. And
come on now.
Now I'm like, yeah, I have to go now. We're like best buds, right? Front row seats.
Yeah, you definitely.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I'm looking forward to it. Have you guys, you had been to Rome, Brian, as a courier, I believe, earlier.
Yeah, once I went, the first time I went to Rome, I went as a courier. I worked occasionally, or I really only worked for him twice. Twice I went, I had a job where these people would call me up and they would ask me where I lived because they could never remember. They'd be like, where do you live? I'm like, in LA. They'd be like, yeah, I know where. And I'm like, oh, I live in Echo Park. I'm like, yeah, you can make it. Get in the car right now. You want to go to wherever. And sometimes they called me more than it ever worked out because sometimes I'd be like, hang on, let me just find out. I just need like 20 minutes to find out if I can drop everything and go to a different country. And then that
the
would be
the look
too
of
long.
Surprise on Jenny's face is incredible.
Well, right it,
it was crazy.
This means like, this is the Italian hand gesture for something is suspicious.
A little suspicious? Wow. Yeah, it was a little suspicious.
Thank you for that.
It was a little weird. And then you go down to by LAX and like go into a weird, there's all these shipping areas around LAX, which are not officially inside the US. They're like in a customs controlled, like weird chain link cage building. So I'd go there, show them all my shit, my passport and all this stuff. And then they'd hand me a bag and they'd be like, this is it. Just take this to a guy.
Just don't take anything from a stranger right before you're about to get on a flight.
Yeah, but just take this thing from a stranger. Did you pack your own bags? What's in it?
They used to ask. The answer was no. In that case, it was a bag with a box in it that was sealed. And I
don't know what it was.
He was an international drug smuggler.
That's not true. It was a film. The time that I came to Rome, it was a film. Because I found out what it was they opened it in Germany. And that's what they asked me. In security in Germany, I flew through Frankfurt and they go, sir, what's in this box? And I go, well, I'm not really sure. And they're like, excuse me? and I'm like, why don't you open it? I'm going to have to open this. I go, go ahead, man. I don't care. Like, what am I going to say? No, I'm not going to, so they open it and I saw it was a film print. And that's what it was, is they were sending parts of film prints with multiple couriers to try to fight piracy. But the crazy thing is that was the first time I went to Rome, and I got there and I was really jet lagged and I was confused. I was also really broke back then. So I was like staying in a hostel and I was like, well, I guess I have to go back in the morning, but what should I do? And like, someone's like, the Colosseum looks really good at night. Why don't you go there? So like just wander down to the Colosseum, and there's no joke. There's like 50,000 people there. I'm like, whoa, this is a very popular tourist destination because I've never been there and I'm an idiot. No, it is. It was Easter and the Pope is there giving mass.
No
He's
way.
Doing Stations of the Cross in Italian. For like the entire city of Rome, like it's just like crowded around, and I'm just like, wow, wait, that's the Pope. Wait, what? I was like, I think I'll go get some pasta, and then and then I went home.
And you don't believe in destiny? Come on.
That was fate. That was definitely
fate. That was fate.
that was a strange, fateful day for sure. Strange.
Wow, that's awesome. That's like, what a great story. Kind of freaky, yeah. But yeah. Because what you didn't realize is if they had opened that box, and what if they had found, like,
just like 20 dead ferrets or something. I don't know. What was that? Same thing. I would have said anything. I just had like some weird piece of paper that was like, I'm a courier.
What? It was like one of those guns.
They're very weirded out by you at every turn. Like as I'm trying to leave in customs, they're like, sir, you have no bags and you've been in Italy for 24 hours. What is your business here? I'm like, courier. My business is courier. Here's my weird piece of paper that says I dropped this thing off. I went to Dubai a different time. It was like, actually like, the only time I've ever had a dude hold a piece of paper up in the airport. It just says like my name on it. And it's a dude in full blown like gear, Arab gear, you know, like a full blown thing, just holding his name. I'm like, here you go, man. And he's like, thank you. And just leaves. I'm like, hey, can I get a ride into town? I'm like, no. Just like, all right. And I actually managed to get fairly drunk by myself in Dubai and then completely lost because I couldn't read any of the street signs at all because I don't speak or read Arabic. So that was a big mistake.
There's
no one to help me. It was very late at night and it still felt like hair dryer hot. I was by myself, confused and lost, drunk in Dubai.
That was the first time I ever went to Amsterdam. That was my
feeling.
Alcohol, but
alcohol it was induced fuzziness. Wow, the two of you have some great stories combined, that's for sure. That's so funny though.
That one was messed up.
That's like the time my
dad, a lot of good.
Yeah, I wouldn't even go into that. Awesome guys.
No.
It's just so such a boring story. Yeah. No, it was about weapons.
Just like I'm a boring time.
It's just like the time that nothing really interesting happened. Anyway, I got to get going.
You guys have got a lot of great stories. That reminds me of this super boring story. Never mind. It's not worth telling.
Anyway.
Yeah, you guys are hilarious. It reminds me of a... no, never mind.
I think I'm going to get fired after this. Cole's going to be
fired.
What? Yeah, you are
fired. I'm so fired. Just tell him I was cool, all right? Please.
Yeah.
Put it in.
They're listening to this.
I don't actually think they do.
Real strong grimace.
I think Jenny's they send it to be edited, and I don't think Cole and Jakob listen. But
no one else is listening anymore.
No.
Yes. Well, those three people that were listening, not us three, but the other three people are starting a new business together now.
They're just tweeting, like, when are we meeting up? They'll probably meet up in Rome, and then they'll be
checking our Twitter mentions and then collaborating with each other. Like, oh, yeah, he just mentioned Greg.
If you really want to read something that has no meaning and is boring, just check out my Twitter feed. It's full of lots of really great fart jokes. And...
Do you want to blow up your spot and shut yourself out on Twitter? Go ahead. Now that we're going,
shut up.
Yeah, what's your handle?
My handle is DHRidge. Yeah. You can at DHRidge check me out on Twitter. I'm gonna make a commitment right now to try to get 10 good potty mouth jokes up on there before this podcast is actually live.
Oh, yeah. Right. So.
Right.
10 new.
So something for 10, Christmas.
10 new super childish jokes. I had a pretty good Christmas tweet a couple years ago, I think. That's a highlight on my Twitter.
We could revive that. Maybe I'll retweet it.
I'm pretty sure it said, Santa, you big fat fuck, get down this chimney. Something like that.
Yeah.
You, and it was spread. It went like wildfire. I think the no brunch.
I think I got one or two hearts on it.
I think you crushed the Twitter game. How does your DM look?
My DM?
What's that? What's DM?
Direct messages.
Oh,
I'm just wondering if any ladies are sliding in the DM right now.
Yeah. Yeah. What's? Is that the best? Are you single, Brian?
No, I'm deeply in love with a short young girl who
young girl
puts up with so much shit for me, and I just can barely understand why. But yeah, I'm not single. I'm in a very serious relationship. I'm not married with kids or anything like that. But I'm with somebody who
in a committed relationship.
I'm with somebody who is better than somebody I deserve, probably. That's how I'll put it. A real sweetheart. You're a really beautiful. Great woman.
Oh, that's good. That's good. I didn't know if it was like a tactic to get women. The Twitter thing.
Twitter? Yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
That's how I got my girlfriend.
Oh, it is. Is that how you met?
She is in the DM, well, yeah. She was a dancer DM. In a music video I directed. So close enough.
That's cool too. Yeah. Awesome. And how did you meet your wife, Michael?
DJ, right?
Yeah, I think I met her on the dance floor.
You think?
I met her through a number of friends because of the fact that I was a DJ, I guess, if you really want to break it down. Okay. But I had been shady. It does sound shady, right? I was trolling her for a while, let's be clear.
Okay. And then, you literally met on the dance floor, but it was...
I saw an opportunity and I pounced on it.
Awesome. All right, guys, I'm going to sign off. It's the longest podcast ever, but I had a blast. This was so much fun.
Yeah, thanks for doing it.
Let us know when you get this thing edited down to 20 minutes. I'd love to hear that.
No, I'm not doing that. You know, I don't even like listen to these.
Let us know when you cut this thing down to the 12-minute format that is the approved
Isn't
length.
That your job?
It's
going to
work so high.
Aren't you guys editing?
It's going to be a hilarious 12 minutes. A hilarious 12-minute long word salad.
It's cool because we shot a hyperlapse of ourselves here, so when you cut it down to 12 minutes, we'll just show that. It'll be like a video.
Yeah, awesome. Right. I'll ask Cole for like a little sneak peek, like a little commercial version. That'd be awesome. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Awesome. Have a great night. I guess you guys are going to bed, or are you just going out to the clubs? The club.
We're to bed together right now.
To bed. Not the club. So next time we'll do the house tour.
Well played.
The bed.
The bed. I want to do the house tour next time, Brian. You'll have to show me around. We'll do like, what's that called? Like Cribs or whatever?
Yeah, it's like MTV Cribs. I'll at least show you. I'll only show you my...
All the shades are drawn.
My panther.
He has a black panther on the mantle. I think that's what I'm going to ask everyone in the podcast. What's on your mantle? So we have Bill Murray, fresco, Black Panther, what, porcelain statue?
Mm-hmm. Black porcelain panther.
And then is that Remus and Romulus?
That's also his rap name.
In front of it?
It's my new rap name, Porcelain Panther.
Black Porcelain Panther.
I don't know if the black should be in there, though.
When people find out panthers. I'm so white, I'm clear. That my rap name starts with black.
Well, just Black Panther. I don't know if that's misleading. Maybe just
that's a Marvel superhero that's currently in the movies right now, so it's not going to go over that good. But Black Porcelain Panther. The thing is, when people are just booing me and throwing tomatoes at me, I'm like, no, I have one on my mantle. And then they're like, oh, okay, cool. Now rap for us.
You're like,
Black
literally.
Yeah. That doesn't happen anyway.
That was awesome. All right. We'll
That part was a lie. That last part was a lie. Everything
Wait,
else in this
if
podcast.
That was a lie. What else has been a lie,
Jenny,
today, Brian?
Michael's gonna go home, but now we're gonna just start the second podcast to take this up to hour three. And so everybody
this
just
is where
settle
it gets
in.
Real interesting.
Hey, both of you guys listening, fucking stop watching TV. Look, settle in. This next part, this next hour is going to be important.
Stop editing. Stop what you're doing.
Because we're going to get into the subject is deep regrets and nowhere. Other painful mom. Emotions that only adults have felt. And
no, you start.
That's going to be hour three. But first,
a quick word from our sponsors.
A quick word from our marketing sponsors.
Which is IHOP.
From
Web. Something.
Yeah. I'm going to take my laptop in the car. I'm going to take this down to IHOP. Yes. I'm just going to hop
We're
on the headphones.
Moons over my hammy.
Yeah. I'm going to do a little moons over my hammy for hour two. And then Black Porcelain Panther is going to get back on the mic for hour three with deep regrets. Jenny Hammer and Black Porcelain Panther. Catch up with you after this short commercial break.
Oh, that's awesome. Oh my God. You better register that domain name, Black Porcelain Panther, like right after you get off
this. I got the Twitter, I got the Instagram.
You got it? Okay, good. Because that's going to go.
Snapchat.
DM him.
Yeah, definitely the Black Porcelain Panther DM.
We're already ready for our apologies about how this is vaguely racist, and
you already have a written statement.
Yeah. We've already got our PR team on that, so the PR team is already apologizing.
Luckily, we don't pay them. It's chill.
A sign of any good success. The PR team is already apologizing for our presentation in Rome. I'm going to have my lawyer contact you about the, because I just need to approve the 12-minute cut of this before we, and I need that before hour two, which is 18 minutes from now. So if you could just have your lawyer send it to my lawyer, me and Michael's lawyer, BCC'd. Michael's lawyer, BCC.
Yeah, I prefer to go BCC.
Which is actually, BCC stands for Michael's rap name, which is Black Chameleon Chandelier. And
BCC. Oh my God, cannot talk, you guys. Seriously?
Yeah. All right, well, hey, it was great to talk to you for a few hours. Talk to you. I'm gonna call you every day at the same time now. So,
we've actually officially started our new podcast now, just the three of us.
Yeah, I think we have a good thing going here.
This is our new podcast. So, talk to you tomorrow morning.
because we all have like 2 hours.
Can you drink tomorrow?
Yeah, I will. I promise.
it's getting a little awkward for us.
Do you feel like I needed it to like lose?
Well, I mean, I didn't see you get up and pee 3 times like we did, you know, and just sort of like.
No, I'm wearing a diaper. It's cool. I didn't want to say it.
Embarrassing in a way, but we.
I'm a pro.
Oh,
yeah,
so
clearly.
You're, I don't want to like leave the screen here. All right, before I totally embarrass myself.
You
embarrass yourself? I mean, can you? I would actually prefer if we don't cut it off before you totally embarrass yourself.
I think we've taken most of the heat on that.
Pretty much.
I can't talk anymore. All right, guys, that's it. I'm booking my flights to Rome right after I hang up.
Excellent. There we go.
We've won one person, so please tell Cole and Jakob. That'd be cool.
Yeah. I'll tell them. They won't listen to this, so I'll have to tell them. They're too busy.
If they're not listening, that probably means that no one is. And that's for the best, I'd say.
We get the Black Panther thing going, or Black Porcelain Panther, I mean, delete Black Porcelain.
No, I'm calling the Black Panthers right now. It's fine.
Then we'll see if anyone's listening or not. We'll have to gauge it somehow, like No Brunch, Black Porcelain Panther, and we'll see if anyone like kind of jumps on.
Oh no, the ad mentions on Black Porcelain Panther are already blowing up on my phone right now.
Awesome.
Yeah.
They're just like shockwaves being sent. All right, guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Good night.
Mwah, mwah, mwah. Good night.
Good morning. Bye.
All right, bye.